Now let's switch it up a little bit here and get away from Blazor, but still talk about the web. We're talking about feature flags. Another one of my best friends in the entire world, Talia Nasi, is going to be coming in. How's it going, Talia?
It's going well. How are you?
I'm doing absolutely fantastic. It's beautiful. I mean, the sun's gone, so that's sad. But, you know, I'm excited for your session, which is setting up feature flags with .NET and Split.io.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm excited too. So thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And take it away.
Awesome. Okay, so we are going to talk about feature flags with .NET. How do we set them up and what are the best practices? And I also just want to know to note that I'm aware that the .NET core feature flag management libraries are available, but today we're going to talk about how to set up feature flags with Split, which is a feature flag management platform. So I'm Talia. I'm a dev advocate at Split. And something that we do at Split is manage feature flags. And a feature flag is a piece of conditional code that allows a software development team to separate code deployment from feature release. And there's so many different use cases when using feature flags. So my favorite way to use them is to test in production. So you would ideally dog food. So, you know, this means that you deploy your code behind a flag and then test it with the flag off with internal users. And then once you know that it's working in production, then you turn the flag on for everyone else. There's also other use cases like if different parts of a feature aren't ready at the same time, you can deploy your code behind the flag while the other parts are being worked on. So for example, if you're a front-end developer and you finish your part of a feature, but the feature also requires back-end work, you don't have to wait for the back-end developer to finish their code. You can just deploy your code when you're done, and then the back-end developer will deploy their code when they're done. And then once all the pieces are in place, you can just release the feature, click on that release button. You can also perform A/B testing to figure out like which version of a feature gives you a higher conversion rate. You can use feature flags as a kill switch, which allows you to turn off a feature for everyone in case something goes wrong and you need to hide that feature. You can use it for subscription management to manage permissions for specific user groups. And then you can use them to also implement a canary release or percentage rollout where the feature is only initially made available to a small subset of the user base so that any issues that are found will only be found by, you know, a small subset of users. So you can also use them for migrating your monolith to microservices. There's so many different use cases, but we don't have time to go through everything. I just wanted to point out, like, why do we care? Like, why is this important? Why even use feature flags? And it's two reasons. One, because it minimizes your risk in your feature delivery process, and it maximizes your impact. So today we're going to build a .NET app, and we're going to use feature flags to give access initially to only the QA team to test a new navigation link and like this new page. So in Split, which is the feature flag management system that I'm using, I'm going to create a segment of users, which I'll show you, and then only allow the QA team to go in and see and test this new page that I'm creating. So in this example, when the treatment is on, if you hear me say like treatment on, that means that the user will be seeing this new page and you can navigate to that new page with the new page link. And so all we're gonna do is we're gonna swap the navigation layout to include this navigation page. And then if you're not part of the QA team, you will not see this new page because we're only gonna target the QA team. So that means the treatment is off for those users and you can see that on the left here. Okay, so the process of what we're gonna go through today is we're gonna create a feature flag from the Split UI. We're gonna install our dependencies and configure our .NET app, and then we're going to instantiate and use the .NET Core Split SDK. So we do have both a .NET framework and a .NET Core SDK, but right now we're gonna do a demo .NET Core app, and this will work on the latest .NET standards. So the first step is to create a feature flag, and I'm going to show you how to do this in Split. So once you log in, you're going to see a button that says Create Split, which is just another name for create a feature flag. And then you'll then be prompted to enter some details about the flag. So we're going to name our flag V2 Navigation View, and then select User as the traffic type. So the traffic type differentiates between the groups of people who see your feature. So for example, I can select device as my traffic type and only allow like Android devices to have access to this app, or only iOS devices to have access to this app. I can also select location as the traffic type. And that would allow only people who are in a specified location. If I only want people in Europe to see this feature, only people in LA to see this feature. So you can customize this to work for your specific needs. And next, we're going to add some targeting rules. And this is where you configure the feature flags. And what we're going to do first is create the segment of QA users that we're going to put into our target. So for our targeting rules, we're going to make it so that only the QA team is going to have access to this new page. So instead of adding each QA team member to each feature flag individually, I'm going to create one segment of all of my QA users, and then I can use this segment in other flags as well for like other feature releases. So on the right panel, you just click on segments and then create a segment, and then you add the users that are in that group. And then when we go back to the split, we're going to add our targeting rules for our QA team. So if you're in QA, you'll get treatment on, which means you see this new page. And if you're not in QA, you won't see this new page. And then again, because I'm keeping the default rule off, I'm saying whoever is not in QA will be served treatment off. You're not going to see the link to that new page. And built into Split is this approval process, which is super important because you want to treat your changes to your feature flags like changes to your code base, because there's still production changes that are impacting your user base. And you can add approvers here, which is like similar to adding reviewers in a PR, or you can just confirm the change. And I'll go through this when I talk about best practices, why that's really important. And then the next thing you need to do in the UI is get your ready-made instantiation code and treatment call. And the way you do this is by clicking on the syntax tab in the drop-down menu. So here on the right, click on the drop-down menu and you hit syntax, and then you select .NET or whatever SDK you're using. So here we're gonna select .NET. And then you'll see this code that you'll need to copy for later, because it's a good guide for your project code in Visual Studio. And just note here that like you will see your API key injected for you, which you can move to a secure key store in the future, but this allows you to get like a proof of concept up and running very quickly. Okay, so the next thing we need to do is install our dependencies and configure our .NET Core Web App with Razor Pages. So first, we're going to create an ASP.NET Core Web Application from Visual Studio. And this is built into Visual Studio. And then we want to give it a name. So we're going to call this Split.NET Core MVC Razor Example. Say that 10 times fast. And then hit Create. And then you want to select Web Application with Razor Pages content, because we will be using Razor Pages for the new page. And then we need to add the Split SDK. So we want to go to Manage NuGet Packages by right-clicking on the project name. And then you want to click on the Browse tab and be sure to search for the latest version of the Split.io .NET Core package and install that. There are two Split packages, one for the .NET framework, which is called Split.io, and then one for the .NET Core, which is Split.io .NET Core. And then you want to build the project using .NET Run in the command line. And we're running this in our browser after the SDK has been installed, just to make sure that everything still runs correctly with your out-of-the-box web project. So nothing broke so far, so we're on the right track. This is just our default project template from Visual Studio. So the next step is to instantiate and use the SDK. So what we're going to do is add a new Razor page that's going to hold our new page. So the way you do this is you right click on the auto-generated pages folder and click add a new Razor page. And then in our new page, we're going to add a brief div and title to the Razor file. So we're just going to create a header that says you can see this new page. And then when you run the project again and type in the new page name after the base URL, you'll see this new page. But however, notice it's not included in the current navigation links. You only see home and privacy, right? So in the shared folder, we need to add a new Razor layout that we're going to call layout V2. And we're going to copy over the contents of the current layout file into your new layout file, and then add in one more list item in the HTML that navigates to the new page. And then in our startup file, we're going to add a static variable to hold our treatment to key behavior off of. And then in that same startup file, we're going to instantiate the split SDK inside of the configure services method. And note that a quick way to test a user against this without building out auth completely is to put a username in the app settings file and pull from that configuration at runtime. So again, we got this from the syntax tab in Split, and this is where you ask .NET, who's the current user and do they have access to this page? So for the Boolean, we're saying, if the treatment is on, then you get the V2 nav, including the new page and the header. And if not, then you get the layout without the new nav. And then lastly, you need to set up the application to default to one of the two layouts. So in your view start file, you're going to add this if else statement, which is now evaluating the Boolean for you. And you can't just put in like any username, because unless it's a user that you put inside of your split segment that's assigned to this treatment that you had in the UI, the response from split is going to be off. So for example, if I put me in, if I put split user is Talia, you're going to see, you're not going to see this new nav link when you run the app in the browser. But since the visibility of the new layout has been toggled to off, that's the reason why, because I'm not targeted in the UI. So you can see that I'm getting the old layout, but now I'm going to change it to a user that is assigned in the QA segment just to see if the app will toggle the new layout. So this is the same user that I put into the QA segment, and now I do see the nav with the correct user, and when I click on it, it takes me to that new page. So with minimal effort, I have toggled the visibility of the next version of our .NET app navigation, completely controlled by the treatments inside of Split. So you can import users with an integrated auth as well by going to the user context inside of .NET, but this gets you up and running quickly to test out the power of feature flags. So now that we've set up this app with feature flags, and we know what they are, and we know how to implement them, I just want to take a few minutes and talk about best practices. So when we look at the feature flag lifecycle, we have four stages. So the four stages are creation, implementation, rollout, and cleanup. So I just want to go through each of these and talk about best practices for each section. So the first step is creation, and there's a few things to note when you're creating your feature flag. So the first step in feature flag creation is to create a naming convention. So there's a few options that you can choose from. So some of the things you can do are include a ticket number, include the name of the service, include the name of the team that the flag belongs to. You can include the name of the functionality. You should also engage with the different stakeholders on your team to define something that makes sense for all of your teammates, and just be sure that there's clear ownership when you create this flag to reduce any friction later on. And if you don't have a concrete naming convention in place, it's like when you have siblings and your mom goes through every sibling before she correctly identifies you, like, my name is Talia and my brothers are Trevor and Tyler. So when I would get in trouble, my mom would go, Trevor, Tyler, Talia. Like, she would go through all of them before she got to the right one that she wanted to get in trouble. So you don't have to go through like every feature flag and like look for the one that you need. You want to be able to look at it from its name and know exactly what it is and what it's doing and who owns it. And again, consistency is key. So if you start out with one naming convention, just be sure to keep that consistency throughout your project, just to avoid confusion. So the next step is implementation. So I kind of touched on this before, but changes to your feature flags should be treated like code deploys. So if you require two code reviews for your code base before someone gets to merge their code to master, main, you should also have two reviews for any configuration changes to your feature flags. Because even though you're not writing code in the feature flag system itself, the changes you make here are going to directly impact your users in production. So you just want to be careful. And like by having this approval process, you can prevent people from making changes to a config of a flag that they don't own or that they meant to make for a different flag. And this just prevents mistakes that could have been solved with using these approval flows. It's also a good idea to move your flagging decisions to the server side rather than the client side. And this does three things. The first is that since single page applications are already making a server side call to render the data needed for the UI, you could make a call to the feature flag service at the same time so that one network call fetches all of the feature flag evaluations with the server side data. And then if you have to kill a feature for some reason, like how would your client side feature flagging system find out? Like it just adds a little bit of complexity there. And then it also helps to reduce the challenges of cache invalidation. And then lastly, you don't want to change the scope of your components just to support your flagging decisions. So your flagging decisions should be encapsulated as much as possible while making your flagging decision as close to the logic as you can, because you don't need every part of your code base to be aware of every component. And then when we're talking about testing, it's a good idea to work with your product owner to prioritize what the most important flows are, what are the most important aspects to test from a business perspective, and then use your automation users and target those automation bots inside of those feature flags. And the next step is rollout. So the most important thing when you roll out a feature is that users should consistently have the same experience. So increasing exposure to a feature should not affect the current exposed population. So if user A sees on when you're at 10% rollout, user A should still see on when you get to 50 and eventually 100. And then you want to build a feedback loop. So feature flags allow you to make controlled changes to your system. So you can observe the impact of these changes and make adjustments as necessary. So if you turn on a feature for half your population and your metrics are showing a decrease in activity, then you should kill that feature and adjust as necessary. But on the flip side, if the metrics show a high conversion rate, you want to keep the change and roll it out to everyone. So it's important to use the data from your feature flagging system to measure if you can move from a smaller percentage rollout to a bigger percentage rollout or vice versa. And then you want to set up alerts to page you if you get any statistically significant changes. So if your business metrics are really being badly impacted by a change, you should be getting more violent alerts through whatever application you use. And then on the flip side, if you get a neutral or positive results, then maybe you can just set up like an email alert or something a little bit less aggressive. And then the last step is cleanup. So you definitely don't want to be stuck with 100 feature flags that have already served their purpose and then were just forgotten about. So something super useful you can do when thinking about removing a flag is you can assign an expiration date for each flag, and then you can set up an alert in your feature flagging system that will poke you and say, hey, this flag is stale. You haven't had any impressions in a while. You can also add a subtask to your backlog to retire the flag at the same time that the flag is created. So when you create the ticket in your backlog to create the flag, make sure you also create a ticket to delete the flag once you reach your definition of done. And then you also want to be sure to remove the old code when you delete the feature flag, because you don't want old feature flags in your code once your flags are deleted and once they've already like served their purpose. Cool. So these are some useful links that we've prepared for you. So the first is a video on feature flag maintenance that just goes into the last chunk of what I talked about. And then if you want to try feature flagging for free, you can go to split.io and sign up for a free account. And then there is a .NET repo that Heather Downing made, and she made this, and it's on this at this website on the bottom, the last link. And this has all the code that I went through today. And this is my contact info. This is my Twitter. And then if you have like specific .NET questions, you can tweet Heather. But I just want to end on a note and say, like, this is how we implement feature flags with .NET. And you've really learned the best practices today. So in the future, you could use this feature flag configuration to deploy all of your changes in a controlled fashion. So you could deploy to production while keeping the flag off by default and testing the feature in production to ensure functionality. And then once you know it's working in production, then you could release it incrementally to users or all at once without any code changes. So that's why I love feature flags. And yeah, thanks for joining everyone. I think we have a few minutes for questions. I think James is going to pop up in a second.
Oh, there I am. Check me out. I'm here. It's happening. Cool. So we do have a few questions coming in. Specifically, David was asking a little bit about Split.io a little bit. You know, you talked a little bit, there's a free trial at the end. Can you just talk about a little bit, like, what does a free trial get you? Like, you know, what specific features are there? We had a lot of questions. I was monitoring YouTube and Twitch about, like, when you would use it. What are the, you know, cool features that bring it over the top?
Okay, so with the free developer account at Split, you do have access to the SDKs. You can go ahead and implement Split. I think there is a limit to the number of seats that you can have per account. And you know, once you get to like the limit, you'll be asked to go to the next level. But the Split free tier is free and it will always be free. So we recommend like going through our documentation and checking out like all of the SDKs. With Split, though, I think what differentiates us is that you do have more flexibility to do what you want with your metrics and set up alerts to make the biggest impact on your product. It's also super developer friendly. Like if you've never used feature flags before, there's like a step-by-step guide.
Very cool. Yeah, I'm going to actually try it out because I know nothing about feature flags, but I am a mobile developer. So this is a question around actually this one here around Xamarin Forms, but specifically, I guess, Sunny, I'm going to rephrase their question here and say, what does it look like for feature flags in mobile applications? Do you see that a lot?
Yes. So you can use feature flags for mobile applications, and you can use the .NET Core SDK for using Split feature flags with Xamarin because it uses the .NET standard.
Oh, very cool. So you could do all this for mobile already today. Boom. That's amazing. All right, cool. One more question for you that we got here. I would love to see that demo, by the way. We'll have to have you on the Xamarin show. It's a show I host over on Channel 9 talking about Xamarin stuff. We'll set it up. That'd be super cool to see Split on Xamarin. From Lewis here asks, what are the factors that you think should be taken to achieve consistency? You were talking about that.
Yeah, so the biggest thing I think is naming convention, and then also who you want in each part of the process. So if your developers usually create the flags and then target whoever they need to be in the flag initially, and then your product person is the one who will turn on the flag, and then your developers will go in and remove the flag, just to have those key people and say, at this part of the process, the developers are responsible, at this part, product is responsible, at this part, DevOps is responsible. So I would lay out the entire process of what you're using the flag for, and just make sure you know who's responsible for each part of that process.
Cool. I have one question personally for you, because I have not put any feature flags in my mobile applications yet, but I've really been thinking about it. I know that my partner at her company, they do feature flags quite a lot, and she was testing a lot of different technologies. But like, where do you think a good starting point is, if I was to put my very first feature flag into an app, like what would that even look like? Like, I know nothing about feature flags, but give me like a very concrete example of like what
I do. So if you've never used feature flags before, the first thing I would say is just start small. Like, I wouldn't start with like, you know, the biggest, most complex thing that you've ever worked on and like try implementing feature flags with that. So start with like a button change or like a CTA change or something that won't make the biggest impact on your app, just so that you know that the feature flag, like if it breaks, like it won't be like the end of the world. So start small. And then you can also start with running an AA test. So that means like the people who are in the flag and out of the flag will get the same treatment, so that you can see that the data coming in will be the same for both. And that'll just build your trust in the feature flagging system. So in the future, like you could do like more complex things once you know, like, okay, I know how Split works, I know how to implement it. And you can just kind of like go from there and like get more complex from there.
Very cool. I love it. That's what I'm going to go do. I'm going to have one. It's going to do the same thing. That's perfect. Awesome. Well, Talia, thank you so much for the presentation. I love it. I'm going to go check out Split and do some feature flags.
Great.
All right, cool. Have a good one. We'll see you later.
Thank you.